Good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to call this conference committee for House File 888 to order. Senator Ingebrigtsen, thank you for getting your crew here reasonably on time.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Glad to be here.
Yeah, I know you are. So without any further ado, I'd like to turn it over to your side of the table and do some brief introductions.
Okay.
And then we'll come over to the other side.
Let's start on that end right over there.
All right.
Please.
Gloria Gunville, Senate Vehicle Research.
Dave Frazier, Senate Republican Research.
Andrew Matthews, Senator from District 15, Mille Lacs, Benton, Sherburne County areas.
David Thomasoni, Senate District 6 from Chisholm.
Kay Rood, Senate District 10 from Breezy Point.
Sean Murphy, Legislative Assistant for Senator Bill Ingebrigtsen.
Ben Stanley, Senate Counsel's Office.
Dan Mueller, Senate Fiscal Analyst.
I'm Greg Knapp, Senate Counsel at Research and Fiscal Analysis.
Dallas Fisher, Community Administrator.
Senator Ingebrigtsen, Senate District 8, Alexandria, Douglas County, Otter Tail County. Chair of the Environment Natural Resource Finance Committee, and Senator Rube being the chair of the policy committee that's included in the bill.
Mr. Miracle.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Harry Miracle, House GOP Research.
Peter Strohmeyer, House DFL Caucus. Speaking of the microphone, please.
Peter Strohmeyer, House DFL Caucus Research.
Rob Eklund, District 3A Representative of International Falls, Ching, St. Louis, Lake, and Cook Counties.
Mark Eaglum, representing 36A Champlin and Coon Rapids.
Chris Wazinski, House District 16A, Lacapral, Yellow Medicine, Lyon, and Redwood Counties from Nordland Township.
Josh Hunt-Teitzman, House District 10A, Brainerd-Baxter area.
Janelle Taylor, House Research.
Brad Hagemeyer, House Fiscal Analysis.
Kaylin Schroeder, Chair Fabian's Legislative Assistant.
Amy is the Co-Committee Administrator.
I'm Dan Fabian. I'm the chair of the Environmental Resources Policy and Finance Committee here in the House. I represent District 1A, which is all of Roseau, Kitson, and Marshall counties, and part of Pennington County. So thank you all for being here. I'd like to start off by saying it's nice. I hope that we don't have any fights here. And the first fight that we have to make sure that we don't have is a hockey fight between Senator Thomasoni and Representative Uglum. Now, I see Representative Uglum is proudly wearing his Bulldogs pin, but I don't see Representative Thomasoni proudly wearing his Denver Pioneers pin.
Mr. Chairman, I didn't want to rub it in, but okay. It went.
Thank you for that. No. Anything else for the benefit of the group before we get started?
Yeah, I used to referee a lot of hockey, so I'll take care of that.
I think it worked very good.
That's right. I'm very proud of it.
I was
going to
fight.
Okay, so what we'll do today is we're going to do a walkthrough. We'll do the spreadsheet first, and if you've got your binders and so forth, I'm sure that staff is putting together. Kaylin did a great job here. We were going to compare just for notes to see which one was more tidy and neat, but we won't do that. And so we'll start with Mr. Brad Hickmeyer. Dan, too, I'm sorry. Yep. Mr. Mueller. So we can kind of compare notes here. Okay.
Mr. Chair, can you get started?
Yep.
Okay. Everyone has a spreadsheet. I believe it's at the table. It's the first part of your folder as well, at least for the whole set. I don't know if they were homemade by the same person or not. The first page of the spreadsheet you'll see is the Pollution Control Agency. The lines 5 through 13 are just the totals by fund. You look at the change items, start on line 16, and Mr. Mueller and myself will probably just bounce back and forth with what the House and Senate positions are on each line. On line 17, you'll see there's a general fund reduction. The House makes a reduction of $1,646,000 per year, and later on you'll see it's the same amount as appropriated from the environmental fund.
Mr. Chair, on the Senate side, the Senate makes a reduction. It's different in 18 and 19. It's minus 828 per year in 18 and 19, and that's a straight-up general fund reduction that's not replaced with environmental fund. But then in the tails, the Senate makes the same reduction as the House of $1.6 million per year. And then down on line 34, it replaces about half of that, $800,000, with environmental fund. The next item is the same on both the Senate and the House, the $250,000 reduction general fund for the municipal liaisons, and that on both sides is replaced with environmental fund money down on line 38.
On line 20 on the whole side, you'll see a one-time general fund appropriation of $300,000 for a wastewater reuse grant.
And on the Senate side, line 21, the Senate moves the funding, the general fund funding for the St. Louis River remediation action over to the environmental fund appropriation on line 41. So that's just a funding swap.
On line 23, you'll see both the House and the Senate, the competitive recycling composting grants. It was a general fund appropriation of $1 million per year. Both the House and Senate remove that appropriation. And then if you look at line 42, you'll see the House replaces the $1 million per year with the environmental fund, and the Senate replaces $400,000 per year for 18 and 19 from the environmental fund.
Next, on line 24, the Senate makes a funding switch from the general fund for the county feedlot program. It moves that down to the environmental fund on line 45. So that's just another item where if you switch from general fund to environmental fund. The next item on the Senate deals with it's lines 26 and 27. The Senate moves the funding from the Environmental Quality Board to the environmental fund. So in total, the Senate reduces the general fund to the PCA in fiscal year 18 and 19 by $10.15 million, and then in 20 and 21 by $11.57 million, and that completely eliminates the general fund appropriations for the PCA in the tails. And again, a lot of that switched over to the environmental fund, but in the Senate proposal, the PCA would be off the general fund after 20 and 21.
On line 29, as Mr. Mueller said, the House reduced the general fund appropriations to the Pollution Control Agency by $5.5 million in the first biennium and then $5.8 million in the tails. And then the next section you'll see on line 31 will be the environmental fund changes, and this is where you'll see a lot of the appropriations are made to in place of some of these other ones. On line 32, you'll see there's an operating adjustment of a reduction of $2.5 million per year from the environmental fund, and that's under the resource management and assistance division in the bill. And I guess I should clarify as well, in the bill this time, both the House and Senate are appropriating by operating divisions, and a lot of these appropriations in the past are made by programs. On line 34, you'll see the increase meant to replace the general fund reduction on line 17 of $1.646 million for the House in each year, and then in the tails is $800,000 for the Senate. On line 35, you'll see appropriation of $100,000 the first year and $50,000 each additional year for the impaired waters list requirements found later in the bill. On line 38, you'll see the environmental fund appropriation for the municipal liaison economist position. Both the House and Senate reduced the general fund and appropriated environmental fund for this purpose. On line 39, you'll see the business-friendly data services. It's $400,000 per year. It's a House-only provision. And it's a governor's proposal. On line 40, you'll see $500,000 per year from the environmental fund to the Pollution Control Agency for the permitting reform requirements found in this bill. You'll also see a similar appropriation in the DNR later on.
Again, on line 41, that's where the Senate had moved the appropriation for the St. Louis River remediation from the general fund to the environmental fund. On line 42, Mr. Hagemeyer already talked about the recycling grants. The House fully funds the same amount that was reduced in the general fund, $1 million per year, and the Senate just funds $400,000 in 18 and 19 and no tails. And then on line 43, the House has an increase of the SCORE grants of $2.5 million per year. The Senate increases the SCORE grants by $500,000 per year. On line 44, the Senate has a $20,000 appropriation from the Environmental Fund for a plastic bag recycling grants. And then the line 45, again, is the switching of money for the county feedlot program from the general fund to the environmental fund. Line 46 is a proposal, $300,000 from the environmental fund for a pilot program at the Shell Rock watershed. And there's language in the bill that explains what that is. And then the last one, the Senate, again, was funding, will move the funding for the Environmental Quality Board to the, all to the Environmental Fund. So the Senate appropriates additional $8.6 million in 18 and 19 from the Environmental Fund, about $8.9 million in the tails. The House is at about $7.7 million in 18 and 19, and similar, close, just a little bit less than that in the tails.
On line 56, you'll see the other fund changes. There's, the House makes an appropriation one time of $4 million from the closed landfill investment fund for landfill remediation activities related to the freeway landfill.
And on the Senate side, on line 57, the Senate adds a brings in a new landfill from Crow Wing County into the closed landfill program. And so that would require additional money to be spent out of the remediation fund. $854,000 in 18 and 19, and then $40,000 per year in the tails. For the total under the Senate for the PCA, you can see on line 61 is a slight reduction of $682,000 to the PCA overall, and then again the general fund reduction was $10.15 million in 18 and 19.
On the same comparison number for on line 61, the House spent an additional $6.2 million to cut the general fund by $5.5 million. And you'll see other fund transactions or revenue changes or transfers, I guess, on line 64. There's a, the House makes a one-time transfer from the environmental fund to the general fund of $4,356,000.
Mr. Chair, next we'll get to the Department of Natural Resources. That starts on page 2. Again, the lines on 73 through 79 are the base amounts for the agency by fund. And then we'll go into the change items. First, we go through the general fund change items.
On line 83, you'll see the Conservation Easement Stewardship Program. The governor recommended $125,000 per year for both the DNR and the Board of Water and Soil Resources, and the House included both of these provisions.
Mr. Chairman, on line 87, the Senate has a reduction to the Eco and Waters Division, of the general fund reduction of $2 million starting in 19, and then it continues on through the tails. And it also has another general fund reduction for water use and monitoring of 1.6 in fiscal year 18 and then $4 million per year ongoing. The next is line 89 and 90 are kind of tied together on the Senate. It's a shift of general fund money for invasive species of $1 million per year, and that was moved to the enforcement division for an increase of $2 million for the biennium to enforcement.
On line 91, you'll see the Lake Cronus AIS grant reappropriation. Both the House and Senate have provisions related to this. We just do it a little differently. The House cancels the past grant and then reappropriates the money. The Senate just extends the grant authority to 2022 or 2020, I believe. I remember the year. But it does the same thing in effect.
On line 96, the Senate makes a reduction to the Forestry Division of $1 million in fiscal year 19 and then $1.5 million in the tails. And this is replaced later on with an increase for the Forest Management Investment Account. The Senate also, there's an ongoing rider from previous years for the forest. It's a forestry IT system that has always had a separate rider in the bill, $250,000 per year, and the Senate gets rid of that rider and the appropriation that goes with it. The Senate also has, and I'll move on to Parks and Trails part of the general fund funding. On 99 and 100, this was a proposal from Senator Rood to put some general fund money into the local parks and local trail grant programs. It's $250,000 per year, and that is ongoing. Senator Thomasoni on line 101 and 102 has proposed a little bit of general fund money for both snowmobile grant and aid and ATV grant and aid programs, kind of to help offset some of the those two accounts are going into the red, so this would kind of help, at least short-term, help with those accounts.
On line 105, you'll see the House has a proposal for increase to natural resource law enforcement. It's $1.39 million per year ongoing. Line 106, the House proposes, or the House has $2.5 million for 18 and $2.9 million for 19 for legal support costs. And on line 107, you'll see the $500,000 per year for the permitting reform requirements in this bill. And I mentioned that earlier, there's a same amount appropriated to the PCA from the Environmental Fund.
Mr. Chair, I want to, so general fund totals here. On the Senate side, the Senate reduced the DNR's general fund appropriations by $7.845 million in 18 and 19, and the reduction was bigger in the tail, is $14.5 million. The Senate had a minus $50 million tail reduction. So some of these reductions on the Senate side go a little bit bigger in the tails to meet that negative $50 million tails target.
And the comparison number, the House increased appropriations in 18 and 19 by $9.2 million. If you go down to line 112, we start the Natural Resource Fund changes. On line 116, you'll see there's an appropriation of $250,000 per year from the Natural Resources Fund for the economic impacts of water appropriation permits. You'll see language later in the bill related to that. On line 117, you'll see there's an appropriation of $2 million per year for 18 and 19 and $1.25 million for fiscal years 20 and beyond for reforestation of DNR lands, and that's from the Forest Management Investment Account.
On the Senate side, the Senate also does increase appropriations for the Forest Management Investment Account, $500,000 in 18 and then $2 million in 19 and beyond. The Senate and the House both have line 119 appropriation for sustainable timber harvest analysis, and this was also proposed by the governor. However, the governor proposed this out of the general fund. The House funds it at the analysis at $500,000 and the Senate's at $200,000.
On line 120, you see Next Gen Forestry Data Systems. This was a government proposal from the general fund. The House is funding it at $4 million for the first biennium and $1 million in the tails from the Forest Management Investment Account. On line 121, you'll see a parks funding increase. Both the House and Senate have proposals here. The House spends $9.8 million from the state parks account, and that's tied to a state parks fee increase that you'll see later in the bill, but in effect it's $2 on a daily permit and $10 on an annual permit. And the Senate has $1 million per year from that account. On line 122, there's a parks funding increase from the lottery in lieu account of $250,000 per year ongoing.
Mr. Chairman, on the Senate side, you'll see on lines 125 and 127, this was the offsetting amounts from the snowmobile account and the ATV account that was replaced one time with general fund money up on lines 100 and 101. Then on line 128, both the House and the Senate have $150,000 from the ATV account for the Voyager Trail. And then the Senate has another additional appropriation from the ATV account, $50,000 for a Virginia trail. So in total, the Senate appropriates about $4.6 million additional money out of the various accounts from the Natural Resources Fund in 18 and 19, and $6 million ongoing, and that's all from the Forest Management Investment Account.
And the House in 18-19 has appropriations of $19.45 million increase, and the tails is $14.7 million.
Mr. Chair and members, next we get to the Game and Fish Fund within the DNR. The Senate has four items here that are all funded out of the Heritage Enhancement Account. The first one is the $400,000 per year that would go to the University of Minnesota Aquatic Invasive Species Center, and that's ongoing. Line 139, we have $20,000 for a lead shot study. Line 140 is $10,000 for 18 and 19 for Midwest lung recruitment. And then on line 141, both the House and the Senate have $30,000 for a shooting sport site study. And the House has that, both the House and Senate have that out of the Heritage Enhancement account. And then the last item on the Senate side, the chair has a proposal for a two-line fishing fee, and the way it would work is half the money would go to the walleye stocking account, the walleye stamp account, basically, and that's a statute automatically appropriated, so this money would produce about $600,000 to that account, and then the other half of it would go to the game and fish fund, its operation account. And that's not shown here as new spending, but the amount that goes to the walleye account would be automatically appropriated. So the Senate spends appropriates additional $1.5 million out of the game and fish fund. The House is at $30,000. And then the Senate has one last item. It's under other fund change items. On line 149, $500,000 from the permanent school fund for initiating some of the sales of Boundary Waters area. The House also has this, but is carrying it in the Department of Administration appropriation. So it's the same amount, pretty much the same purpose, but they're just carried in two different agencies. So, Mr. Chair, in total, the Senate appropriations to the DNR on line 156 versus the forecast decreased by $1.2 million. And the general fund has a decrease by about $7.8 million for 18 and 19. And then the decrease in the tails is about $7 million total reduction to the DNR and the tails.
The House for all the funds is $28.7 million over base and $9.2 million from the general fund over base for the 18 and 19, and it's $8.7 million in the tails and $4 million from the general fund increase in the tails. Next, you'll see on line 159, we have the revenue changes that we're tracking for this bill. Line 160, you'll see the extension of the Lake Cronus AIS grant. The House is a positive because we're canceling it, so it shows up as revenue, and the Senate shows it as lost revenue because they're extending the appropriation.
On line 162 and 163, the Senate had a proposal for some free state park passes for military veterans. And that has a small loss of $4,000 per year to the general fund and $50,000 per year to the parks account in the natural resources fund.
On line 166, you'll see the total for the state park fee increase the House is carrying. It's $2.2 million in the first year, $2.67 the second year, so a total of about $4.8 million for the first biennium and $6.6 million in the tails. And that's double what the governor had proposed. On line 171, you'll see the increased hydropower permit fees. This was the governor's proposal to get nine facilities into compliance at $10,000 each. The House put that at half the amount, so $5,000 each, which is a total revenue of $90,000 for the water management account. On line 172, you'll see both the House and Senate are tracking $10,000 of revenue related to the deputy registrar snowmobile fee increase that was proposed in this bill.
Mr. Chairman and members, on line 173, the Senate has some language items dealing with Fort Ridgely State Park and the golf course, and the tracking we have here shows a little bit of lost park, state parks revenue due to that language. $49,000 per year would be due to that. And then the Senate on line 174 and 175 also has an exception for non-resident, non-motorized boats to be registered in the state, and that has a slight loss to the water rec account and to the aquatic invasive species account. $31,000 per year for the water rec account and $14,000 per year to the AIS account. And then both the House and the Senate on lines 183 have some changes to the mineral licensing in the amount of fees that are collected, and there will be a slight reduction in fees on that Clubhouse and Center, carrying a $1,000 reduction. And then on line 184 and 185 is the provision I mentioned dealing with two fishing line certification. And this is the amount of money that it would bring in, $600,000 for the biennium for both the game and fish operations and then the walleye count. So overall, the Senate changes in fees is about $755,000 in 18 and 19 and $1.2 million in the tails. And the House, mostly with the park increase, is $5.1 million in 18 and 19 and $6.7 million in the tails. And that's due almost entirely for the park increase. Next, we get to the Met Council Regional Parks. House has no change there. The Senate just does a general fund reduction of $330,000 per year, but replaces that with money from the lottery and lieu account in the Natural Resources Fund. So it's no change to their base budget in total, just a swap of funds there. The Conservation Corps in the House and the Senate have no change, so they're at base funding. Then we get to Board and Water and Soil Resources. And
on line 230, the House has part of the governor's proposal for the wetland conservation efficiencies. The governor proposed $500,000 the first biennium, and I believe $125,000 in fiscal year 20. The House gives a one-time appropriation from the general fund of $300,000. And on line 233, you'll see the conservation easement stewardship funding of $125,000 per year from the general fund. And as I mentioned earlier, the DNR has the same amount for the same purpose. On line 236, you'll see the SWCD district services grants. Both the House and Senate are reducing that appropriation, which was $11 million per year, down to nothing.
And Mr. Chairman, also note that both the House and the Senate in their clean water legacy bills fund at $11 million out of the clean water, out of their clean water fund. On the Senate side, on line 237, the Senate has a proposal, $240,000 per year to help do some dredging on the Minnesota River down by Carver. And then the Senate makes some reductions in the tails to a couple of grant programs at Bowser, and this was in order to meet our tails target. So we reduced a little bit of money from Bowser Administration, Wetland Conservation Act, the Drainage Work Group, and the Natural Resources Block Grants, and County Weed Management. So overall, the Senate reduces the Bowser from the forecast by $21.5 million, and again, most of that is the $22 million reduction to the Soil and Water Conservation Districts. And the House is very similar to that, $21.45 million. But then our tails reduction is $23.3 million. Next, we get to the Minnesota Zoo. The Senate has no change to the base funding.
The House has an operating adjustment of $500,000 for fiscal year 18 and fiscal year 19 and $1.756 million in fiscal year 20 and beyond from the general fund. If you flip to the next page, you'll see at the Science Museum in Minnesota, the House and Senate did not make any changes to the Science Museum. On line 178, you'll see the Minnesota Board of Tourism. The House did not make any changes to the Tourism Board.
And on the Senate side, the Senate funds the there's a governor's proposal for $600,000 for special events promotion. This was a program that was started in fiscal year 17, but it just funds that out of their base appropriation. So in total, the House and the Senate are the same at forecasted amount for the Board of Tourism. The last item, on the House side, again, I mentioned before that the House funds the PWCA land exchange out of the Permanent School Fund, the same $500,000 the Senate had in the DNR, and the House has it here in the Department of Administration. So in total, if you look down for all the agencies in this budget area, on line 312, The Senate, this includes all fund, reduces appropriations by $23.4 million for 18 and 19 for all the agencies in this area, and $32.8 million in the tails.
And the House increases just under $15 million in the first biennium and just under $2.4 million in the tails.
And Mr. Chairman, on the last page is the general fund summary. You can see where we are just for the general fund by agency. And I'll just point out the totals here on line 334. I mentioned the governor here. The governor was at a $64.55 million increase. The House is at minus 21.2, but the real actual appropriation change is on line 330. They're at a minus 16.7. Then they do a credit to the general fund on the revenue side, so that gets them to 21.268 reduction. They're at $20 million reduction in the tails. And the Senate in 18 and 19 is at a $40 million general fund reduction and a $50 million in the tails. And you'll see that the total, the summary of the different revenues in the bills below that, we went through all those in detail. And the one other thing I'll point out in the Senate bill that we're not showing in any of the other totals is there's some language in the bill that appropriates some of the money from the Volkswagen settlement. And $1.5 million, if that settlement is approved and everything, would go for propane school bus conversions. And so that's contingent on the settlement money being collected by the state, and it would be deposited into the environmental fund. That's it.
Thank you. Questions, members? All of the accountants of CPAs here at the table. Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Miller, Mr. Hagemeyer. And then next, who's doing? Okay, Mr. Knopf is doing? And Janelle? Okay. So, Ms. Taylor and Mr. Knopf, there's no other questions. If you want to go through the bill, I think, because of... Yeah, we'll just skip to Article 2 because Article 1, obviously, is what we just covered. So... And you guys can flip coins or, well, the House can go first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As the Chair mentioned, we're going to start with Article 2 and use the revisers side by side that should be in your folders. The first section is Section 1. It's a House-only section. This would allow the counties north of Highway 2 to file a no-net gain policy with the DNR if they so chose, and then if the state, minus the Department of Transportation, were to purchase land within the county, they would have to sell an equal amount. On Section 2 on the House side and Section 1 on the Senate side, this is a provision from the DNR policy bill that allows the DNR to hire attorneys. There's just a minor technical difference between the two. And then on Section 3 on the House and Section 1 on the Senate size on the bottom, this is an identical provision regarding some permitting changes for the DNR's Tier 2 permits, and like I said, this is the same. Section 4 on the bottom and Section 2 on the bottom of R2 are similar provisions regarding the DNR's expedited permitting process. There's just a minor technical difference between the House and Senate. Section 5 and Section 3 on R3 are the same. This is a provision regarding DNR's continued work on environmental review and permits in the event of a government shutdown. And then on R4, there's a Senate-only section, Section 2.
Mr. Chair, members, Section 2 on the Senate side is an operating efficiency provision related to DNR. This is the enforcement account where they put the money together. It was in the governor's recommendation, and it was added in Senator Ingebrigtsen's bill that would allow them to mix the money into a single special revenue account that can be used by enforcement, depending on the vagaries of the weather and some of the activities that are going on around. Section 6 on the House side and 4 on the Senate are similar, except the Senate uses the term unadopted rule and talks about what it means to be guidelines. Basically, what the House does is just say that you can't use them unless you've adopted them under rulemaking. So they're similar provisions, but they look a lot different. We've got a little more wordy on the Senate side.
And before delivery.
And Mr. Chair, Section 7 and 3 in the 7 in the House and 3 in the Senate are the same. Section 8 on the House and Section 4 on the Senate are the same in H.R. 5. Yes, those are similar provisions related to youth training for off-highway motorcycles and using them on the trails. Section 5 on the Senate is a Senate only, and this just says that when they're reviewing the grant and aid application, that the DNR, if they deny them, the commissioner must provide the applicant with a written explanation for denying the application. So the applicant knows why they're getting denied. Sections 9 on the House and 6 on the Senate, dealing with the deputy registrar's fee for snowmobiles, that's the same. Section 10 on the House and 7 on the Senate are the same. Section 11 on the Senate related to prohibition of youth cooperators and 8 on the Senate start out similar, but they get to be a little different at the bottom. The Senate only has a provision related to the handlebars, the 6-year-old provision that you see on 40.11 to 39.3, but the House has some additional language.
Mr. Chair, if you look on lines 40.15 through 40.17, you'll see that the House has language that increases the maximum engine size for ATVs that youth can operate on public lands, and then there's some additional language on lines 40.22 through 40.25 that puts some minimum requirements to kind of accommodate the use of side-by-side style seating ATVs. And make sure that the youth can reach the foot controls and the steering wheel. And then if you go to R10, there's a house only section 12. This would require all those under 18 to wear a helmet when they're operating an ATV. Current law just allows that for requires that for class 2 ATVs. The next two sections are the same from the DNR policy bill. Section 15 and through 18 actually are all the same. These make a number of changes to the DNR's naturalist program. Sections 19 and 15 on I-12, also from the DNR policy bill, are the same regarding AIS and requiring a permit to hold bait in infested waters. Sections 20 and Section 16 on the center side on the bottom of R-13. These are also from the DNR policy bill. There's just a minor technical difference between the two. Section 21 and Section 17 are the same from the DNR policy bill. Also regarding the classification of AIS species. Section 22 and 18 on R-15 from the DNR policy bill are also the same. Section 23 and Section 19 on the bottom of R-52 are the same regarding the Lake Minnetonka pilot study, just extending that and making some other changes. And then Section 24 and Section 20, there's just some minor technical differences between the House and Senate on the Gull Lake pilot study that similar to that Lake Minnetonka study. Section 25 on the bottom and Section 21 are from the DNR policy bill and are the same. And then on the top of R-17, there's a Senate-only provision.
And Mr. Chair, the Senate at one time had two provisions related to the Fort Ridgely State Park selling liquor. There was a piece in the liquor bill authorizing the liquor license by the county board, and then this was to kind of a bypass because there's a state park rule that says that you can't have liquor within a state park. And so, but the liquor bill was amended in the Senate to now include this provision and to put a broader provision in. So I think this Senate provision is not going to be needed. It's my understanding, depending on what happens, because they need to get the liquor license anyway, so if the liquor bill doesn't pass, they wouldn't be able to get it under this. They would still have to, because the county board wouldn't be able to issue it for a golf course. So I think Section 22 you're probably not going to want to do, but that would be to determine later. I just wanted to point that out to people to make sure. And then section 26 dealing with the golf carts on the Fort Ridgely golf course, those are the same. And then section 27 is a house only.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, this is a section that was proposed in the governor's budget bill as it was introduced, and it updates some language regarding lodging to accommodate the new types of facilities like yurts and camper cabins, so that it's clarified that those revenues can go into the state park account. And then on the bottom of the page, there's a Senate-only provision.
And Mr. Chair, members, that's the part that deals with the military personnel. Mr. Mueller went through on the fiscal impact of this. It's a smaller impact, but it does kind of broaden what constitutes and who's eligible to receive those free permits. And it has the commissioner determine what types of information the commissioner needs to see to issue those. But it's basically a fairly minor amount of money. It's like $50,000 per year, if I remember right, to the state park account, a loss due to this. But it does clean this up and make it easier for members of the military and just disabled veterans. And then, Mr. Chair, on section 28 of the House, 26 of the Senate, we have an identical provision on basically exempting the state person from needing a state park permit when they're using the golf course at Fort Ridgely State Park.
And then, Mr. Chair, section 29 on the House side, this is the section that increases the state park permit fees by $10 for the annual and $2 for the daily, and then also some other changes to the other park permits. And then section 30 and section 27 on the Senate side are the same as from the governor's budget bill. Section 31 and section 28 on the bottom of R19 and then continuing on to R20 are different. This is from the DNR policy bill regarding designating state water trails. You'll see that on line 50.1 through 50.4 on the House side. The House has the language that was originally proposed in the DNR policy bill that would require the DNR to establish some criteria for making those designations, whereas the Senate does not include designation.
Could I just quick explanation. The Senator Rude didn't want to give that necessarily that authority to the DNR. You know, currently we have the list of the rivers that are on that, and the thought was to keep that process the same. We were adding some rivers here, and then they would still have to come to the legislature to designate any new water trails. And whereas the department's proposal was to allow them to add to this list without putting it in statute.
And then, Mr. Chair, sections 32 on the House side and section 29 on the Senate side are the same from the governor's budget, just designating where special use permit fee revenues would be deposited, and then there's another Senate-only section.
Mr. Chair, members, this is a watercraft license. Mr. Mueller mentioned this. What it does is if your home state doesn't allow you to, or doesn't require you to have a license on your watercraft, that this would exempt them here. Currently, under current law, if you're licensed in another state, you can bring it in for not up to 90 days without getting a license here. But if it's not licensed and not required to be licensed in another state, it's actually illegal. What I've heard is this could be a good one for areas, especially northeastern Minnesota, on the wild boundary, where it's people bringing canoes from Wisconsin, which I don't think requires a license, and we require one. And so it's caused a problem for some people. And this was added as an amendment in committee to allow that. And then, Mr. Chair, as long as I've got the microphone here, section 33 on the House and 31 on the Senate are the same, dealing with the flotation devices. And then on the lights, section 34 in the House, 32 in the Senate, they're similar. The one difference is that the Senate, rather than having a full misdemeanor for somebody who's got these other lights that are blocking the way of their running lights or whatever for the boat, would say that a first violation doesn't result in a penalty, but is a safety warning, and second or subsequent would be a petty misdemeanor, rather than having this be a full misdemeanor for these related to the lights. And then, Mr. Chair, we both have the provision relating to expenditures directly paid for the purpose under the water safety grants. and then 35 and 33, and then, Mr. Chair, we have a house only on Section 36.
Mr. Chair, the Section 36 is a provision that would modify the definition of prescribed burns, and this is in response to recommendations the DNR put forth in the prescribed burn report that was required last year. And then Sections 37 and 34 on the Senate side and 38 and 35 are the same. These are the first of many provisions from the DNR policy bill that removed the AG's role and various minor roles. So, and those are the same. Section 39 and Section 36 and R25 is from the DNR forestry bill. There's just a minor technical difference between the two. Section 40 and 41 and Sections 37 and 38 are from the forestry bill, and they're identical. Section 42 and 39 are identical, and these are from the DNR policy regarding the AG's roles getting removed, as is 43 and 40 on the top of 26. Section 44 on the House side and Section 41 on the Senate side are from the DNR forestry bill. There is a difference if you look online, 55.4 through 55.7. This provision would remove the requirement that the DNR publish timber sales in a newspaper, and if you look on the Senate side, that requirement is not removed. Section 45 and 42 are the same. This is a combination of the DNR policy and forestry bills, removing the AG role and making some other changes. They're the same. 46 and 43 are also the same on the R27 from the forestry bill. 47 and 44 are the same as our 48 and 49 are the same as 45 and 46 on the Senate side. And then if you go to R29, there's a Senate-only provision.
Mr. Chair, Section 5, 105.27, you'll see that this is in the mineral leasing chapter, and what it says is that the commissioner can't cancel a lease of the state by failure to meet production requirements prior to the 36th year of the lease. So the commissioner would be unable to cancel it for that purpose, and if there was another purpose, they weren't paying or whatever, but just for failure to meet production requirements prior to the 36th year. And then, Mr. Chair, we have two provisions, 50 on the House and 47 on the Senate, that are similar. The one difference is really, both of them have an internal effective date of July 1, 1991. The Senate also just provides a retroactive effective date going back to that date to be clear that it does apply back. But I think the result is similar under both bills.
And then, Mr. Chair, Sections 51 and 52 are false only. This would establish a new contested case procedure for certain permit to mine decisions related to, if you go to R32, there's a Senate and House sections that are identical, 53 and 6, that change what would require final decisions on permit to mine to go to the Court of Appeals rather than the go through a contested case proceeding. Sections 54 and 55 on the House side and 48 and 49 are identical. This is from the DNR policy bill regarding the AG's role. And at the top of R33, there's a Senate-only provision.
Mr. Chair, members, there are a couple of provisions in here. I think these were in the administration's bill that trying to clarify that what portable shelter means and when you have to. There's a portable shelter, you don't need to get licensed to be on the ice. Whereas, and this is just to kind of clarify how that works. And this is the definition. You'll see a substantive provision later in the bill related to that. And then it looks like we have a number of the same provisions, 56 through 60 on the House side and 51 through 55, kind of making some changes in the protected wild animals, adding salamanders, lizards, and other animals that are, and any animal listed as endangered, threatened, or special concern to the protected list. And then, Mr. Chair, members, on the top of page R34, Section 61 and 56 are the same, dealing with reciprocal agreements. That's the Attorney General language that Ms. Taylor mentioned earlier. And then 62 and 57, this is the 50 cents that goes into the Wolf management account. And again, both sides are identical, including having identical effective date related to the delisting of the Wolf.
And then, Mr. Chair, there's a house-only provision, section 63 on R35. This would allow portable stands to be left overnight in WMAs, provided they meet certain requirements. And then the next several sections are from the DNR's gross over limits bill. Sections 64 and 65 clarify the role of county attorneys in prosecuting violations of game and fish laws. Section 66 and R36 would broaden the type of violations that result in misdemeanor penalties and clarify. Section 67 would require that more than one animal be taken when you're dealing with threatened and endangered animals before the gross over limit penalties would kick in. And then Section 68 would lower the restitution value threshold that would apply when license seizures would take effect from 5,000 to 1,000. And then Section 69 would prohibit a person from obtaining a fishing or hunting license for 10 years if they're convicted of a violation where the restitution value of an animal is 2,000 or more. And then moving to page R38, there's a Senate-only provision.
Mr. Chair, before we get there, I just have to make a couple of comments. Senator Ingersen was in the Judiciary Committee when Senator Eichhorn's Bill 1374 was heard, and that's the match to the changes that you're doing on the prosecuting authority, the misdemeanor, and the gross over limits. So I just wanted to point out that didn't make it through the Senate. That's why you won't see it on the Senate side. But there were some differences that I would just want to note. One was a technical, the way it's written on 64.14. Conflicts with other provisions in the game and fish laws, and we fixed that on the Senate bill. And then the Judiciary Committee was not happy with Section 66 on the House side, our Senate Judiciary Committee, because there was some concern about broadening that misdemeanor language to include anything. In fact, I think they asked the
Which section was that?
It's Section 66. It broadens the misdemeanor penalty in the game and fish laws to anything in the game and fish laws rather than when you're taken in violation. And the concern was is they wanted to know what we're adding to misdemeanor penalties, and they asked the department for a list and never got one. They had rejected that provision. I just wanted to make sure you're aware of that, and that Senate members are aware of where this was in the Senate. Thank and then Mr. Chair will go on to explain the Senate-only provision. Placing traps or snares on private land. It requires written permission when you're placing a trap or snare on private property that is not subject to a requirement to be open to the public unless you notify the written permission from the person. And including that is accessing the property from a public water or from waters of the state.
And then, Mr. Chair, Section 70 on the House side would allow anyone to use a scope on a muzzleloader during the muzzleloader season. Currently, those age 60 or over can, or those with a special permit. Section 71 on the House side and 59 on the Senate side are identical regarding prohibiting the DNR from adopting rules that would restrict the use of lead shot. And then there's another Senate-only provision.
And Mr. Chair, members, you'll see Section 60. That was Senator Rood's bill on allowing blaze pink clothing to be used while hunting, big game or small game. And that's that's her bill. It's included here. And then on Section 61 on the Senate, that's where the Commissioner must reserve one permit and give first preference to a resident of Minnesota Veterans Home for bear hunting. And then 62 deals with bear hunting outfitters. It basically says that the commissioner must not require a person to have CPR certification to be eligible for a license.
And then House Section 72 makes some modifications to the DNR's elk management plan. There's some restrictions on increasing the herd, and this provision would narrow those restrictions to Kitson, Roseau, Marshall, and Beltrami counties. On the bottom of R40, Section 73 and Senate Section 63 are the same. These are from the DNR policy bill. And then there's a Senate only provision, Section 64.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and members, Section 64, this deals with the, Mr. Mueller mentioned that this senator versus a bill relating to two-line angling. It allows for a two-line endorsement to take a fish during the open water season. Currently, under current law, when there's ice on the water, you can do this, but this will allow it during the open water season. The one issue there, too, is though, is there is an exception on water during a catch and release season for any species. So in other words, on Mille Lacs, if there's a catch and release only for walleye, you wouldn't be able to use two lines on Mille Lacs. You would be prohibited, but you could use it on other waters. And this is effective March 1st of next year, which is the new license season. Mr. Mueller went through some of the revenue. Section 65, again, this is a clarification of the portable shelters. Basically, when you don't have to license them, that you can't leave them or be outside of 200 feet of the shelter while it's on the ice for it to be unlicensed. And Mr. Chair and members, on the bottom of page R41, we have two provisions related to Northern Pike that are the same on the Senate and House, Northern Pike amendments. And Mr. Chair and members, on the mineral retailers, we have a very slight issue. I'm not sure it's an issue, but it's very similar, but just very technical. I won't even go into it. And Mr. Chair and members, on Section 68 of the Senate, this was Senator Rood's bill dealing with the importation. Basically, it allows... Currently, you can't import minerals. You can import minerals through the state. You can import dead minerals to feed the fish, but you can't really import minerals to use in the state. And this would allow a limited exception for golden shiner minerals that are certified under the Arkansas standards for the Arkansas bait fish certification program. So the golden shiners could be brought in to be sold and used in Minnesota. And then, Mr. Chair, member, Section 69 and 76 in Senate and House are the same. Section 70 is the Senate only. This is Senator Rood's bill dealing with the progress for improving water quality, the 25% by 25% provision. And I won't go into any detail on it. You can look at the stakeholder and that sort of thing. And Mr. Chair, members, on page R45, Section 77 House, 71 Senate, you'll see that both sides are removing the ability for counties or watershed districts to issue a penalty order for violations of the buffer law. There is a slight technical difference in there. There's a change made by the House that's not picked up in the Senate. Section 78 and 72 dealing with the rules for soil loss ordinances, clarifying that. Those are the same on both sides. Section 79 and 73 are also now related to the buffer requirements. There are some differences in these definitions. The Senate has a provision that says that for public water to be required to require a buffer in a public water, it has to have water in them continually for 12 months each year. And then on the with jurisdiction, the House basically talks about notifying the board when it's county or watershed district except jurisdiction. The Senate has the board determination that it has adopted a rule or ordinance or official controls to enforce the section. So there's an approval by the Board of Water and Soil Resources before you can assert jurisdiction. Section 80 on the House and 74 in the Senate are similar. The big difference is if you look on on page R47, 68.12, it allows for the Soil and Water Conservation District Board to approve the other alternative practices rather than the Board of Water and Soil Resources. And it also has a provision in 68.15 that allows a landowner may request the SWCD to make a determination, and if the landowner has requested at least 90 days before the applicable effective date, the Soil and Water District make a determination, and the landowner must not be found. So the landowner would not be found compliant until they heard back from the SWCD on whether or not their proposal is approved. And then there's on 71.12 on the House and 71.13, It's like provisions on the Senate side, you'll see a difference. The House moves all of the buffer requirements to November 1, 2018. The Senate extends each of them another 2 years, so the public waters is 2019 and public drainage systems are 2020. And then also the Senate has a provision, a new paragraph G in 69.5, dealing with only using seed mixes that were grown and processed in Minnesota for the buffer, and that if that seed is not available, they would not, the landowner would not have to comply with that provision. And then on the corrective action provision, section 81 in the House and 75 in the Senate, it's similar, but the one thing different is on 69.15, the House just calls for 100% of the cost of the buffer. The Senate says it has to be 100% of the cost of the buffer and annual payments or an easement for the land. And then there's actually a technical change, too, on 71.28 on the House side. And then if you look at the bottom of that section, it's on page R49, 70.23 on the Senate, you'll see the same language on the annual payments for enforcement, that they can't enforce it unless they get 100% of the cost plus annual payments or an easement. And there's a technical change on 70.20 on the Senate, 72.25 on the House. And then, Mr. Chair, members, we've got 82 on the House and 76 on the Senate. They're the same, dealing with the constructed management facilities for stormwater of Senator Rootsville. Section 83, dealing with the Wetland Service Bank area. I think both sides have the identical provisions on Section 83 and 77 in the House. And then on the top of page R50, you've got Section 85 and 79 of the Senate. You'll see an effective date later. We did this one similar, where we have the internal July 1, 1991. We also have the effective date provision. But the House has an additional provision on 73.31.
Mr. Chair, if you're not here, the DNR would be required to notify the counties that are impacted by these wetland replacement plans under the House side. And
Mr. Chair, remember, you can see on the bottom page R53, that additional retroactive effective date on the Senate side. And then, Mr. Chair, we have similar same provisions on 86 of the House and 80 of the, well, except for the last paragraph. I'll let Ms. Taylor explain that.
Mr. Chair, actually, House Section 86 and then Senate Sections 80 and 7 basically are identical. They're just split into two different parts, I think, just because of the way the bill was structured in the Senate side. So.
Thank you.
So this is the same.
Then, Mr. Chair, I think we pick up again on the bottom of R56 with Section 81, which is a Senate-only provision.
Mr. Chair and members, this is dealing with calcareous fens, and it basically tells the commissioner that they must allow a temporary reduction in groundwater resources under an approved management plan for appropriating water. This is a Senator Matthews bill. And then Section 8, this is in the Wetland Conservation Act. It says that when making a determination under rules that whether a rare community will be permanently or adversely affected, that they must consider mitigation activities before, just rejecting it out of hand. And apparently this is something that they, policy-wise, they do, and was added to the bill by amendments, Governor Parade. In 87 on the House and 82 on the Senate, deal with the members of the Technical Evaluation Panel for the Wetland Conservation Act. The Senate has the shorthand version that just basically says if you have an ownership interest, you must disclose that in writing to the local government unit. And then the House has some additional language that not only a financial interest or a management interest, management responsibility, that they have to disclose that in writing to the panel and the local government. So there's some additional language on the House side on that. And then on page Section 88 of the House and 83 of the Senate, dealing with authority and orders, the Commissioner of Natural Resources. This was a bill we heard late and then adopted in this bill. The Senate just carries the original language relating to if there's not been found a violation of the restoration order that they cannot record it and they have to remove the record on the deed. The House has some additional language. There's some technical differences, but also additional language on 80.18.
And Mr. Chair, the House just provides a process for how the notification would work and what the DNR would need to do once they were notified. So it's just some clarifying language on the process. And then, Mr. Chair, Section 89 and 84 on the bottom of R59, there's just some technical differences. And this relates to the water use permit exemptions, one for the hydro power that was proposed by the governor, and then the stormwater, if you look on 81.7 through 81.9. And the Senate and House just get to the same end using a different process, but this pretty much technical, although it looks a little bit different.
It is technical. Mr. Chair, it's technical. They're just technical differences on how we approach it.
And then on R60, Section 90, this is a modified version of the governor's proposal. If you go to the top of R60, two lines 82.29 through 83.2, this is where the major change is, and this is what cap the hydroelectric power water use permits at 5,000 rather than 10,000 as was originally proposed by the governor. On the bottom of R62, Section 91 and on Section 85 is the same. This is a waiver of fees for the unpermitted hydroelectric facilities. Sections 92, 93, and 94 and 86, 87, and 88 are all identical in these regarding water use permits, so I won't go through them since they are identical here. The next change would be on the bottom of R64. Section 95 on the House side and 89 on the Senate side, there's some differences. This is, we heard when we were going through this spreadsheet about the economic impacts related to water permits. If you look at this, these plans, the DNR would not be able to make a groundwater management area plan change without doing an economic analysis. In the House side, if you look on 86.24 and 86.25, the analysis would have to cover local government's impacts as well, and then also the plan would have to include strategies to address economic impacts, where the Senate does not have that language. And then there's a Senate-only provision.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members, this is again from Senator Matthews' bill. And this, what this does is it basically says that when there's agreement, when you've got a well interference problem and there's agreement to buy out the one owner's well, that you basically depreciate it by 2.5% per year for the first 30 years. So there would always be some value at the end of the 30 years, but it would be diminished by 2.5% per year prior to that. And then on 96 and 91, the Senate and House have very similar provisions on impaired waters list, public notice. That's a very technical difference between the two. And then we've got a number of provisions here relating to reviewing proposed agency actions. The House and Senate, I think you could say that this is, even though there are a number of places where the words are a little bit different, basically the end result is the same, that both sides use a little different wording for the reviewing proposed agency actions dealing with the PCA and their water permits. And again, you'll see on page R68, very similar, that it's there are a number of words that are different, so you'll see the shading, but it basically gets to the same point, including when you get over to subdivision 6, it looks very different, and you'll see more shading. But I think if you read that carefully, they're very, very similar. It's just done in a different style, and the provisor system kind of picked up on that and showed the shading, even though you'll see that. My understanding is all of these changes are very differences are very minor, and generally, I don't think I need to say generally. They are very technical differences. And then, Mr. Chair, on page R70, you get to section 99 in the House, 93 in the Senate. On the noise requirements for publicly owned wastewater treatment facilities, those are the same. Section 94, we've got a few sections here on the Senate side. Mr. Mueller mentioned the spreadsheet, the Crow County landfill, and so this is where they're being brought in. So you'll see there's a new definition of custodial care on 84.20. They are at the stage of custodial care. And so this is then on page R72 on 85.28, you can see where the this is where they're kind of led into the closed landfill program. And the same with 86.27. You'll see about what's being transferred over because they are under custodial care right now, rather than some of the other landfills weren't. I don't think any of them were that far along when they were brought into the program. And then, Mr. Chair, we get to the end of the Senate sections related to the Crow Wing County landfill.
And Mr. Chair, in the bottom of R74 and then continuing to R75 are three sections, 100, 101, and 102 related to the freeway landfill. This would require the state to indemnify certain eligible people from their liability for the freeway landfill. And then if you look on at section 101, it would also allow the use of the closed landfill investment fund for on the cost incurred under these indemnification agreements. And then if you move to R77, House section 103 and 90, Senate section 96 are the same. And then 104 and 97, there's just a small technical difference, and this is about the heating fuel oil vendors and their liability. Section 105 and section 10 on the Senate side, these are similar. There's just one difference, and if you look on 94.15, you'll see that the House is not striking the Tier 1 permits from the permitting efficiency report, as is done on the Senate side. The major chain on this section is on line 95.2 through 95.3, requiring permit review schedules to be produced. Again, that's identical. So if you move to R80, House section 106 and Senate section 11, these are identical regarding the PCA giving draft permit notices. Section 107 and section 98, this is in regard to the VW sentiment money, you'll see on the Senate section there's some additional language requiring MMD to establish an account and then close the account when needed. Section 108 and section 12 on the bottom of R80, this is the PCA's expedited permitting process. These are identical. Section 82 and on the bottom of R82, I mean, section 109 and Senate section 13, this is the government shutdown provisions related to the PCA's environmental review and permitting. There's just a minor technical difference here. Then on R83, you'll see the House has two sections that are deal with unadopted rules, and these will need to be addressed because right now they're in conflict, but sort of the same differences that were pointed out earlier when we were looking at the DNR apply. But if you were to compare 110 to section 14, and then section 11 and section 14 are more similar. And then on the top of R84, section 112 and 99 are identical regarding the moratorium for new open air swine basins. And then there's a Senate-only provision.
And yeah, Mr. Chair, members, this is the propane school bus fueling station. An improvement station rebate program that Senator Matthews brought to the committee. And you can see, so what it does is provide grants using the Volkswagen money. And you'll see on 89.27, there's $1.5 million. It is a statutory appropriation from that account in the environmental fund for grants under this section. Grants must be awarded through request or proposal. And it also says that the grants must comply with the litigation or settlement or providing receipts to the account. So they can't make and do anything different than what will be allowed in the litigation or settlement order. And then, Mr. Chair, both sides have a change in the membership for the EQB and 113 on the House and 101 on the Senate. They're the same, and there's some House-only provision on 114.
Yeah. Section 114 would eliminate a number of duties of the EQB that the Senate does not. And you'll see also in the repealers, there's some additional duties that are also eliminated as part of the health provision. Section 115 and Section 15 on the Senate side are different. If you go to our 88, the Senate has some additional language that would exempt from mandatory EAW requirements feedlots with less than 2,000 animal units. But the rest of the language is the same. And then on the bottom of our 89, Section 116 and Senate Section 16 are the same regarding environmental review decision appeals. And then Section 117 and 17 on the Senate side, these are virtually the same. There's just a small technical difference here. And then there's a Senate-only provision.
Mr. Chair and members, but the Senate-only provisions on data classification, basically it says that if the proposer prepares the draft EIS for the action according to the rules adopted, the proposer is considered a government entity under Chapter 13, and all data, including communications related, are public government data subject to disclosure under Chapter 13. So in other words, when you see that the section prior to that, Section 17, where they can prepare the draft environmental impact statement, this would say then that they are considered a governmental entity if they do that for the purposes of preparing that statement. Mm-hmm. And then, Mr. Chair, members, we have on 118 and 102 on the Senate side, we've got the same provision on both sides dealing with the dedication of a trail to portage that has been in constant use for 15 years or more. And then, Mr. Chair, members, we have a House only on Section 119.
Section 118 would increase the minimum donation requirement for the state parkway to coincide with the increase in the state park permit fees. And then there's a Senate-only section.
Mr. Chair, this is dealing with tax forfeited lands. And what it does is it says that because under current law, if you have more than 150 feet of waterfront, that the county can't sell the tax forfeited land without getting approval by the legislature. What this says is that if it's a parcel or tract adjacent to meandered lake or other public waters, it may be sold. Since it's been platted, if it's within a plat of record, that this prohibition on selling the land wouldn't apply for platted land. So that's the first change that the Senate has on tax forfeited lands. The second change is Section 104, and it's a fairly small change, and you'll find it actually on page R94. On 93.15 on the Senate, instead of having the limit for the small timber sales be $3,000, what's being replaced with 500 cords is the definition, so it wouldn't change based on the price of the timber or the value of the timber. It would still be 500 cords regardless of the value of the timber. So that's the only change in that section. But it's a long section, long subdivision that needs to be included to make that minor change.
And then, Mr. Chair, in R96, there's a House Section 120. This is a provision from the governor's budget bill, which would change when gas tax revenues are transferred. And then there's another Senate-only provision.
And, Mr. Chair, members, this is the chair's merchant bag provision that prohibits a bag ban or tax that's based on the type of bag or whatever. And so that's Senator Ingerbusson's bill on merchant bags. 106 is the boathouse leases. This is basically, if you look at 96.23, 96.24, you'll see that what this does on those boathouses on Stunts Bay and Lake Vermilion underground park, they have a they're charging right now the market rate, which is some people have considered to be too much for what they're getting there. And so what this does is just says that they can't exceed 50% of the average market rate, and that the commissioner must issue a receipt for each lease payment on FM 96.29. This is a special law for those boathouse leases from 2000. And then, Mr. Chair, on 121 of the House and 107 of the Senate, both sides have the provision dealing with the taking away the requirement that the PCA adopt rules. It doesn't take away their authority, but it takes away the requirement in paragraph A. But the House also, currently the EQB rules are mandatory under this, and the House makes that, changes the shall to a may. And then the House has provision on section 122.
Mr. Chair, if you look on the next page at line 1.09.8, you'll see that there is going to extend the rulemaking requirement for the wild rice water quality standards. So that would allow the PCA to delay that a year. Section 123 and 108 are identical. This is regarding Sophia's law delay for certain rental boats. Section 124 is a house-only provision. This is another recommendation coming out of the DNR's prescribed burn report. This would, if you see it, it would just require open burn permits rather than general permits as they were recommended. Section 125 and Section 111 on R100, there's just a technical difference between these demolition debris landfill permit requirements. Section 126 and 116 regarding the transition of the EQB members, there's just a technical difference here. Section 127 and Section 114 on the bottom of R101 and then continuing on to R102, they both deal with the Sand Dune State Forest. The House has some additional language. The big differences are that the House would require a forest management plan to be put together, and then it would require county approval of that plan. And then if you look on 1.114 through 1.118, it would require notification when the DNR is doing prescribed burns. And then the House also has an immediate effective date for the provision, which the Senate does not. And then Section 128 and Section 109 on R102 and R103, this is for the Fort Ridgely State Park Golf Course. They're pretty much the same. You'll just see that on line 112.3 and 112.4 on the House side. The agreement would have to make sure that there was no negative fiscal impact to the DNR. And then House Section 129, and then a rider from on the Senate side, lines 22.7 through 22.110, both deal with the Hill Annex Mine. The House provision would require the DNR to work with local entities to come up with an alternative operation model for the park and then submit a report to the legislature, whereas the Senate would require that the level of service and hours of the park be maintained at fiscal year 2016 levels. And then at the bottom of R103, Post has a provision requiring a base budget report. This is similar to the report that was required and was submitted to the legislature last year. Section 131 is a house-only provision. This is providing some rulemaking exemptions related to the retailer license that we discussed. Sections 132 and Senate Section 110, this is regarding the stormwater use permit exemptions that we saw earlier. There's just a technical difference here. Section 133 and Senate Section 115, these are different. This is related to the affluent limit when a public facility or on the Hull side, you'll see an industrial facility would comply with new requirements. They would be basically guaranteed that they wouldn't have to do additional capital investment for 16 years. So that's the major difference between those two. And then on R105, there's a Senate-only provision.
Mr. Chair, members, Section 112, this is Senator Thomas-only's provision. It relates to the disposition of proceeds when St. Louis County sells tax-forfeited land to the Fond du Lac Band. And what it would do is have them put it into their environmental trust fund. Each of these northern counties that participated with the leased lakeshore sales back in the early 2000s and were required to put the money into an environmental trust fund. And what this says that if they're selling to the Fond du Lac Band, that they're also going to put that money into the trust fund. But again, it's a special local law, so it only becomes effective if the St. Louis County Board approves of it. You'll see that in the effective date. And then, Mr. Chair, members, on 100.7, you see Section 113 on the Senate side. It basically tells the Commissioner of Natural Resources to issue upon application a water use permit for calcareous fens located in Pipestone County. The permit must agree to the following conditions, and it lists all of the conditions of the permit if it's issued. And then it basically says the commissioner shall monitor, and if the commissioner concludes that the fence remain viable after 15 years, the commissioner must renew the permit. But if they cancel it anytime after 5 years, then the commissioner may revoke the permit after 5 years if they're finding that it's a problem, but then it also has to be reimbursed for the cost of the owner of the system has to be reimbursed for the cost. We also, on Section 117, have a point source implementation program. This is the wastewater infrastructure program. It basically allows Detroit Lakes to receive a grant for up to 80%. Currently, there are limits in the wastewater infrastructure program, and this would bypass those limits for Detroit Lakes, a very expensive system for a smaller city. And then, Mr. Chair, Section 19 is suspension of certain water quality rules. It basically suspends the rules that were adopted by the PCA in 2014. And as you're going through this process, and there's a process that's been put in place for that going forward on rules, but this would say while those are being looked at, that those rules would not be effective. And then, Mr. Chair, members, Section 118, this is related to Senator Rood's provision on the Trolling County Landfill, and there's some renumbering of the definitions that needs to happen, and then there's some cross-references, so that's very technical. And then, Mr. Chair, the House has some additional repealers. We have, the rules are the same, and we've got, that they have the same repealers as the Senate, but they have some additional ones.
Mr. Chair, the first repealer that's different is the 97B.103 subdivision 5. This is a provision related to the muzzleloader, broadening that. This would be repealing the disability permit since it would no longer be needed. And then you'll see that 97C.711 is highlighted, but they're on the both sides, so you can ignore that. And then 116C.04 subdivisions 3 and 4, those are the EQB duties that I mentioned earlier.
Can you repeat that, please? Questions, members? Discussion? I know that staff is... Or Ag is waiting for staff to get there to leave. They're coming here, that's what it is. And they're scheduled to be here when we're done. So, discussion. And then we'll talk a little bit more about a roadmap. So, Green Bridge will have the gavel next time we meet. So, discussion to the side by sides or spreadsheet. House File 888. Okay.
Well, sure. Mr. Chair, we'll do the meeting tomorrow, public testimony tomorrow, as you well know, and then what's the... I must have a highly sensitive phone here.
Yeah. We're just highly sensitive here in the house.
Yes. Must be my knee. Must be my middle knee. We'll have some discussion tomorrow, testimony tomorrow, and then the roadmap from there, I believe, is Monday. You will call a meeting and we'll get into...
We think so.
Okay.
If Senator Westrom can be here, we'll do that.
He says he'll be here on time, I'm pretty sure. So. Any members, I guess, have any questions, you know, from this point forward? Okay. Otherwise, tomorrow we have the meeting will be tomorrow after the adjourn of either, you know, whoever's running the latest tomorrow, I guess, half an hour afterwards. Same room, this will be number 5. And those folks that are here tonight that are interested are welcome to the Ducks Unlimited Banquet tonight, the annual Capital Ducks Unlimited Banquet over at the Embassy Suites this time. So, Mr. Chair, thank you.
Thank you. Anything else, members? Okay, Roger. Thank you.